Mitch Steele, the author of the book on IPAs, joins me to talk about new hop products. This is Beersmith Podcast number 167.
This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
This is Beersmith Podcast number 167, and it's early March 2018. Mitch Steele joins me to talk about the wide variety of hop products available to brewers. Thank you to this week's sponsors, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They have a great online learning platform at learn.beerandbrewing.com, where you can take a wide variety of online courses in brewing. If you use the offer code BEERSMITH2018, it'll give you 20% off when you sign up for any of their online courses or get the magazine. Learn about brewing at learn.beerandbrewing.com. And also the new BrewVision thermometer from Blickman Engineering. This interactive wireless digital thermometer connects right to your iPhone or iPad and lets you remotely monitor and record temperatures. You can download your recipes right from the Beersmith Cloud and get updates and alerts as you brew. Get the BrewVision Bluetooth thermometer today, another great innovation from BlickmanEngineering.com. And finally, Beersmith Software, the industry standard for home and professional brewers that lets you design great beer recipes and brew with confidence. Download your free 21-day trial today from beersmith.com. And now let's jump into this week's episode. Today on the show, I welcome Mitch Steele. Mitch wrote the book on IPAs called IPAs, Brewing Techniques and the Evolution of India Pale Ale. Mitch is COO and brewmaster at New Realm Brewing Company, which is a new brewery in Atlanta. And he's a former brewmaster at Stone. Mitch holds a degree in fermentation science from the University of California at Davis. Mitch, it's always a pleasure to have you back on the show.
Thanks, Brad. It's good to be here.
So let's see, what's going on? How are things going with New Realm Brewing? The last time we talked, I think you were just getting ready to launch it.
Yeah, we opened up the restaurant side of the business on January 8th. So we've been running for about 2 months now. We've been brewing for three, and things are going pretty well. I mean, there's a lot of growing pains involved, but I think overall the beers are tasting good. The restaurant's doing well, and we're starting to get into, kind of an operating mode instead of a startup mode. So that's always a good thing.
Is it been well received? I know you had some challenges getting a new brewery open in Atlanta, right?
Yeah, like any new brewery, you got to go through a lot of city government stuff and permitting and things like that. And that's always hard, real challenge. And you learn a lot going through that process. But, right now when we're open, weekends in particular, it's standing room only. There's usually a 1 to 2 hour wait to get a table on Saturday. So I'd say things are going pretty well. I'm very happy with the beers. We're starting to brew some different things now that we've got a little bit of time under our belts and a little bit of experience on the brew houses. We're starting to flex out and brew some interesting things. So, I think people can look forward to having a little more variety than what we had when we first started. And that's a good thing.
And where is it located exactly? And what kind of beers are you brewing?
So we are just east of Midtown Atlanta. We're in an area called Old Fourth Ward near Ponce City Market, which is a very kind of up and coming neighborhood in the city of Atlanta. A lot of apartments, a lot of really good restaurants, really good bars. It's a very cool area. We're brewing, our main four beers. We have a West Coast IPA called Hoplandia IPA. We've got a Pilsner, which I'm really excited about just because I've never really had a chance to do a Pilsner. It's been very traditional before. And it's been really well received. We have trouble making enough of that because it's got a long cycle time in the fermenters and things like that. We've got a really nice pale ale. It's very Sierra Nevada inspired. It's kind of a tribute to Sierra Nevada in some ways. And then we've got a double IPA. And then we're brewing some interesting one-off beers. You know, we've got a golden ale. We've got a Belgian triple, an imperial stout, an Irish dry stout that we've brewed for the spring. And yeah, so we're starting to really get a nice portfolio going.
Well, that's awesome. I'm glad it's going well for you. And you were already talking about growing. I think that's fantastic. Today, though, you wanted to talk about a wide variety of hop products that are available, and including some new ones that many brewers may not be that familiar with. But let's start with the classic hull hops. We'll talk about maybe how to best use those.
Yeah, I worked for Anheuser-Busch for a long time, and the very first brew pub I worked at, that's all we used was hull hops. And so I've got a lot of experience with it. I think the nice thing about hull hops is they are just the pure form of hops. You know, they're just the flowers that have been compressed and stored. And if you want to go the most natural way to use hops, that's probably it. Whole hops are great to use in the brew house and great to use for dry hopping. And the problem that comes from using whole hops, though, is just removing them from the wort or the beer. And that's always the big hang up with using whole hops. A lot of homebrew setups and a lot of craft brew setups are not set up to have any sort of straining systems where you can get the hops out and remove the hops from the wort. But they give you the real great flavor. There's a lot of really good breweries that swear by using whole hops only. When I was at Anheuser-Busch, they swore by using whole hops only until the early 2000s. And it was quite a shock to learn that we were entertaining going to extract or pellets with a hopping there at Anheuser-Busch, because it had been drilled into us for years how much better whole hops are for the beer and how much more control we had over the ingredient itself. And so it was an interesting transition and Anheuser-Busch went to pelletized hops. I believe it was in about 2004, and that was an interesting process.
So what are some of the major advantages and disadvantages working with them? You mentioned already a couple things, but.
Yeah, I think, the advantages are you get, if you're doing a hop selection, you know, what you select is what you get. You know what you're getting. You have a little bit more control over the hops themselves when you're using them in large volume. As far as the disadvantages go, I think they're just more difficult to handle. And I think that's probably the biggest one. You know, a 44-pound box of pellets is about the size of a small suitcase, but 44 pounds of whole hops is about three times that size. It takes up more volume, and hops typically come in a 200-pound bale, which is pretty difficult to wrangle around in the brewery. And
looks kind of like a hay bale, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's about the same size, and so they're harder to work with, of course. Whole hops tend to oxidize faster than pelletized hops, and you get some variation from bale to bale. And if the bales aren't treated properly, all your lupulin glands can fall out of the cones. And, you know, if you're using a whole bale of whole hops and you get to the bottom of the bale and you've got a whole bunch of yellow powder at the bottom, you know, you've missed out on some of the goodness in some of the earlier brews. So, you know, those are the kind of things that are detraction from using whole hops, apart from also having to have some sort of hop strainer in your brew house. And dry hopping with whole hops is really tough. I think the people that do it best are Sierra Nevada, and they've figured out that torpedo system where they pack a container with a perforated drum in the middle of it. They pack with hops and they run beer through it. But if you're dry hopping on that kind of a volume and you're trying to add hops to the tank, it's a real bear to pull them out of the tank and get the beer off of the hops. And so I think the biggest disadvantage from using whole hops is sheer handling. On a homebrew scale, though, I think the biggest disadvantage of using whole hops is just getting good fresh hops. And I know this has changed a lot since I was doing a lot of homebrewing. But, you know, when I was homebrewing, you know, you'd go into a homebrew shop and you buy hops and they'd be all brown and you never really knew about the quality. And now there's so many really good mail order companies. You can get hops that have been treated properly and you know, they're going to be fresh and of good quality. But still, it's a little bit harder to find a really well-treated hop, a hop that's been stored properly when you're using whole hops.
Yeah, when I started brewing in the 80s, and for a long time, I didn't know the hops were actually green because they kind of stored them on the shelf, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah. They were brown. But it must be a challenge commercially to store these bales of hops, too. You want them cold stored, probably. You're trying to reduce the oxidation, right?
Yeah, you have to keep them cold. And, you know, once you open them, you have to use them up fairly quickly or find some other way to vacuum pack them or something. And, you know, that's a problem. I know at Anheuser-Busch, we were using a lot of hops and we used to store them at a warehouse very close by. So there was a warehouse within probably 10, 20 miles of each brewery that stored them at super cold temperatures. And then we just brought them in as we needed them. But you do require a fairly large cold room to use whole hops.
And then, of course, most of us use pellet hops now, right? That's a dominant form, I think.
Yeah, certainly. And that's what I've been using for the last 14, 15 years or so. And I think it's interesting because when I first started doing specialty beers at Anheuser-Busch, there was a lot of discussion about using pellets. And I think back in the early 90s and late 80s, I don't think pellets were of the quality that they are today. There's been a lot of technology and put into the pelletizing process as far as keeping it oxygen free and keeping it cold, because the hammer mill and the pelletizer, the process generates a lot of heat. And I think it's, you know, in the early days, those hops that went through the pelletizing machine could end up being pretty grassy and pretty affected by the heat. And I think that's gone away to the point now where I think pelletized hops are, you know, some would argue it's even better quality than whole hops. And pretty much because you can vacuum pack a bag of pelletized hops and you can keep them under a vacuum until you actually open the bag and they're you know, under a nitrogen environment when they're processed, and it's super cold, and you know, everything that protects the hop is being done now. And so I think they're a better quality than they were 25 years ago.
And there's some advantages in using pellet hops too, right?
Absolutely. I think they're much easier to handle than whole hops. You know, you can get them in 11-pound bags or 44-pound bags or, you know, even smaller bags on a homebrew scale. And you pretty much just add them to the wort or the beer, and then eventually they settle out into a fairly large sludge pile in the bottom or a true pile in your brew house. I think that, you know, just from a handling standpoint, they're a lot easier to handle and a lot easier to use. And certainly they are easier to remove from the process. In the brew house, they settle out with your true pile. And in the fermenter, if you're using a conical fermenter, they settle out into the cone. So they don't tend to float like whole hops do. A little bit easier to remove from the process. The consequence of that, though, is you tend to lose a lot of wort or beer with the hops. And so your efficiencies aren't quite as good as if you're using something else.
And, you know, the fact that they don't float, I think, is a disadvantage, too, for dry hopping, right?
Yeah, you have to. That's absolutely true. You have to find a way to get them resuspended at times. And, you know, at Stone, we used a circulation process where we would come off the racking port of a fermenter that had been dry hopped and then pumped through the bottom, the cone. And we would go through three circulations before we allow the hops to fully settle out. Here at New Realm, we're doing it a little bit differently. We're bubbling CO2 up through the bottom of the tank to kind of resuspend the hops. And we do that two or three times before we chill the tank down and let them settle out. And so, yeah, keeping them in suspension can be a challenge. during the dry hopping process for sure.
Okay. Any other tips for using pellet hops?
Well, I think, you know, the one thing that I'll say is that your efficiencies are going to be better than if you're using whole hops, you know, and get a handle on your utilization. You know, and the one thing that I remember saying is to a group just recently is regarding whirlpool hopping. You know, a lot of people add hops at flame out on the kettle. You do get pretty good utilization there with pellets. And we did some studies with this at Stone where we were getting as much as 15 to 20% utilization from our whirlpool hopping, which surprised the heck out of us. And, you know, I think most people assume it's going to be about 10% utilization. And we were definitely getting more than that. And it actually, you know, on new beers, it made it where we started using a lot of whirlpool hops and kind of going into more of a hop bursting type of hop program. We were getting much more bitterness than we wanted, and it was very hard to get our bitterness dialed in on some of our new beers. And so just be careful with those late hop additions. You might get better utilization than you think.
Yeah, especially at high temperatures, you can get, 50% of boiling or more, depending on the temperature. I've been researching all this. I put it into the new version of Beersmith. I'm trying to finish up here, but it's interesting. So what about wet hops? Most homebrewers don't have access to wet hops unless they grow it at home. But, you know, wet hops are fresh hops. They're right off the vine, right?
Right. You know, and that's a big thing, especially if you live close to a hop growing region and you can get them shipped to you in a reasonable amount of time. We did some work with wet hops at Stone. And to be honest, I gave up using them because by the time they got shipped down from Washington, they were shipped cold. But when we opened them up, half of them had already wilted and gone brown. And it's just a really hard thing to manage. But a couple of points, if you are using wet hops or fresh hops that have not been kilned and dried and baled, is that number one, you got to use 5 to 6 times the amount that you would use for using pellet or just regular hop cones that have been baled. There's a lot more moisture in them, and you got to account for that by using more a larger weight of hops. So the standard is about 6 times what you would use if you were using regular dried hops. And then you got to have a way to pull them out, you know, of the beer. And so I remember going to Bale Breaker Brewing Company in Moxie, Washington, which is owned by a family, the Smith family, that owns Loftus Ranches up in that area. And they grow a lot of hops for Yakima Chief Hop Union. And they built this huge hop strainer off to the side of their brew house so that they could do a lot of wet hop trials in their brewery. I may be exaggerating a bit, but it seemed like it was the biggest tank in the brew house was this hop pack that they had for using wet hops. It was huge. And it just because you have to use so much more hops, you know, to get the same effect. I think the best use of wet hops, if you don't have any way to add them in the brew house with a nice hop strainer, is to use them as a dry hop. And then you can throw them in there. And then again, the issue is going to be getting all the wort recovered from that. That's a large volume of solid material that's going into your fermenter. And you may suffer a pretty big loss in yield of beer, you know, that you actually get off of that fermenter if you throw in a lot of hop material.
And I get this question quite a bit. How quickly do you have to use the wet hops? I mean, let's say you pick some fresh hops off your, you know, vines in your backyard, or you're fortunate enough to live in a hop growing region. How quickly do you need to get those into the brewery?
Pretty quick. They tend to oxidize and spoil faster than a regular dried pellet or a regular dried cone. I'm sorry. But, you know, we had a rule when we were actually doing some work is use them within 24 hours because and it depends on how you store them. Now, if you're growing hops at home and you can put them in a you know, in like a sealed bag, and you can actually, you know, use one of those like freezer contraptions to pull the air out of the bag and seal it up real nice. It'll keep for a while. And it'll do well. But, you know, when we were getting fresh hops at the brewery, we were getting them in large garbage bags, basically. So there was no oxygen protection at all. And if we didn't use them within 24 hours, they were gone. They were toast. So we just, you know, it was a very hard thing to plan for and schedule. We never knew when they were coming because the harvest date swings, you know, by plus or minus 4 or 5 days from what, you know, when you order the hop, when you think they might be coming. So, you know, things happen. And so you got to use them up real quick, which is why we only did them as dry hops when I used them at Stone.
So in addition to the classic hops, there's a lot of new concentrates entering the market. And there's a whole bunch of different methods they use to concentrate the hops, and there's a whole bunch of different products available. But let's start with cryo hops, which have kind of popped onto the market here.
Yeah, I haven't used cryo hops until recently, but you know, basically they're a concentrated hop that has gone through part of the and there's some proprietary stuff here that I'm not fully cognizant of, but I believe the way they make those is they go through part of the pelletizing process, the grinding process, and then instead of pushing that material through a pellet die and under high pressure, they just pull the powder off and collect it and use it. And, you know, everything's done under a very cold nitrogen environment. So the hop material stays fresh and unoxidized. And, you know, it's like the old process of making a type 45 pellet, which is also called an enhanced pellet, where some of the leafy material is removed from the process. And so what you're left with is material that has the same amount of alpha acid content and oil content and such, but it only takes up 45% of the volume of a regular hop pellet. And that's the type 45 process. And my understanding about the cryo hop process is that it's something very similar to that, and where a lot of the leaf material is removed and what you're left with is a somewhat concentrated form of lupulin with some green material. And so you get a little bit, you get more efficiency because you don't have pellets that need to be broken down in the beer. That it's just powder that just goes straight into the beer and you're extracting, and you got a lot more surface contact with the hop material. So in theory, not only is the material more concentrated, but you also get better extraction in the beer because it's such small particles. It's kind of cool to use. We just did a couple of beers with it. We did a beer we're calling Techno Hop that is using extracts and lupulin powder, cryo hops only. And that one's coming off our system in about a week, so we'll see what it tastes like then. But we've just started playing around with it. The big disadvantage of the lupulin powder and the cryo hop powder is that it tends to float in the beer, and that's been the biggest issue about it. You know, if you dump the powder into the top of your fermenter, and the powder just tends to float on top of the beer, and that's been the biggest issue. So now what's happening is Yakima Chief Hop Union has come out with a powder that is loosely pelletized, so the pellets actually go into the beer, become submerged before they break apart, and it works better. You get a much better hop extraction off of this process.
And what's the best way to use these? I think they're used primarily in dry hopping, right?
Dry hopping for sure. Also whirlpool hopping, I think, is really popular with these.
So, I mean, they have a fairly high alpha concentration. It's like 3 or 4 times probably what the regular hop is, right?
Yeah, it's at least double. And the oil content is really high as well. And but they don't recommend using them for bittering. They recommend using them in the whirlpool and in the dry hop, because really this product is all about extracting hop flavor and aroma. And the feeling is that if you add them in the kettle, all of that aromatic and flavor goodness is just going to volatilize really quickly. And so the companies that produce this recommend very strongly not using them in the boil, but using them post-boil and in dry hop.
Okay. Anything else on lupulin powders or cryo hops?
Well, I think it's pretty interesting. They're expensive. You know, you're going to pay about double what you pay for a pelletized top. And, you know, there are people that tell me there are some flavor differences, some brewers that I've talked to about using it, but that may be due to the concentration effect. They're just more concentrated, or it may be due to the increased level of extraction. I just don't know yet. I haven't done a lot of work with them, but, we are just starting, and we bought a bunch and just recently, and we're just starting to use them. I think it's interesting that a lot of varieties are available now with these with this lupulin powder cryo hop product, and so I think it's something that's going to gain some traction as we go. I believe that there are a lot of New England IPAs people are brewing where they're adding this hop powder to the fermenter during fermentation, and that's an interesting way to use it as well. And that's something we actually tried. I did a collaboration brew with Kelsey McNair out at North Park Brewing and Colby Chandler from Ballast Point back in August, where we did that, and we threw the powder into the fermenter before we even filled the fermenter, and so the powder got submerged in the wort, and then was bounced around by the bubbles produced by fermentation, and the beer came out really great. So I'm looking forward to trying it some more.
Yeah, I know a lot of folks have been playing with that dry hopping during active fermentation, and it does produce some interesting biotransformations, I think. A lot of people are getting interesting fruity flavors out of it, I think, right?
Yeah, you get some really intense citrusy flavors and fruit character doing that. And I think the science on this whole process of adding the hops during fermentation is really just taking off. But it's something that intrigues me tremendously. I really want to, whether you make the beer hazy or not, I think the idea of adding hops during the fermentation and getting that biotransformation is something that's very fascinating and can create some really interesting flavors in the beer.
Okay, let's move on to CO2 extracts, probably one of the more widely available products. It's kind of like a syrup, right?
Yeah, it's a very thick syrup. It's like paste until you heat it up. And that's always been kind of a problem with these products is that they're very thick. You need to heat them so that they'll flow. Otherwise, it's like glue. And so they're a little bit more challenging to use. The nice thing about using CO2 extracts for bittering is if you're doing a very heavily hop beer, you can really increase your brew house extract recovery and yield by using it. And I just to give you an example, when we were doing some studies with Stone IPA or Ruination IPA at Stone, and we were using extract and just to see how it would work. And so we added extract for bittering, and Ruination IPA was a beer that had a very heavy whirlpool hop load, and we kept that the same, but we took the bittering hop out and used extract for it. And we actually gained on a 100-barrel batch, we gained about 5 barrels of wort, which was pretty significant. You know, when you look at it at that scale, that's a huge, huge yield increase. And so we were looking at and moving towards using more extract when I was there. But the problem with using extract is it's very hard to measure out. It comes prepackaged as, a kilogram of alpha acids. There are about 55% alpha acids in the extract. And, to try and get them to flow where you can actually measure it out is very difficult. Also, getting the material out of the can is very difficult. And I've seen people do it two ways. One is to put the cans in a 180-degree water bath, which works pretty well. It gets the product to flow. And the other way is to actually freeze the can and take the ends off both sides of the can and then just push out this solid frozen block of hop CO2 extract. Which is a little more difficult, but it gets all the hop out of the can. And the problem with heating it up is there's a lot of hop material that's left on the inside of the can. So what a lot of brewers do is they have a stainless steel basket, closed basket. They can put those cans in after they poured the hops out and just drop that basket into the boiling wort and get hop wort flow through those cans and pull out all that extract from the sides of the can. So it's not an easy product to use, but but it really does have a lot of advantages.
I should probably ask, what is it? I probably should ask up front, what is it? What is actually the CO2 extract?
So what the producers do with this is they put the hops into a CO2 environment and then increase the pressure and to the point where the CO2 turns into a liquid, and the liquid actually extracts the oils and the resins out of the hop material. And so it goes into this solution of CO2. And then when you release the pressure and bring everything back to normal temperature, the CO2 evaporates and you're left with this paste. And, and then all the green material just goes into the waste stream. So you don't get quite the same aromatic character off using it, which is why most people just use this extract for bittering. You can't really use it as a dry hop, for example. Number one, you can't get it to dissolve in cold beer, but also you don't have a lot of the leaf material as well. So it's basically just this concentrated hop resin, oils, alpha acids product.
So it's primarily used in the boil then, right?
Yeah. I don't know of many people that are ever using it, you know, kind of as a late addition, but it's a great, great thing to use for bittering because you really only have to use a small amount to get the bittering power that you get from using a larger volume of pellets or whole hops.
Yeah. And it's concentrated up to, I think most of them are around 65%, something like that, alpha acid, right?
Exactly. Yeah, they're 55 to 65%. So it's just pure hop resin.
But you still have to boil it, right?
You do.
Yeah.
You do.
It's not isomerized, so you still have to boil it, right?
Most of the extracts I've used, I don't know if they make pre-isomerized hop extract. I believe they do.
They do. You can get it. You can actually get it even at the homebrew scale now. You can get isomerized extract, which I was going to actually ask you about next, but.
that's fascinating. I've never been interested in using pre-isomerized extract. It's just one of those things that hasn't really been on the top of my list with so many other things to try. But I know large brewers use them, and then large brewers have all sorts of hop products that are treated and can be added after the fermentation and things like that to increase bitterness. So there's a lot of stuff out there that I haven't used and have a lot of experience with yet.
Well, it was actually the next topic was isomerized extracts. And I know you haven't used them a lot, but they are available at the homebrew level. And the advantage of the isomerized extract, of course, is that it's already been boiled, if you will. And so you can add it at any point in the fermentation to get more bitterness, right?
Exactly. And and it's an easier process to add it there than add it in the boil, I guess. If you want to touch up your bitterness or just, if you have, I know the big brewers, what they do is they have different product streams with different bittering. They'll take the same wort and send it off to a few different products, and they can adjust the bitterness based on the product post-fermentation using something like a pre-isomerized extract, which is the real value of it. It's an efficiency thing. You're going to pay more for it, but you get better efficiencies, and if it makes sense financially, why not?
Yeah, and I mean, at the homebrew level, I know some people use them to correct a beer that maybe didn't come out right. You can actually add more bitterness by buying some of this pre-isomerized extract. You can add it at the end after you've already finished the brew.
Yeah, perfect.
Kind of cool. Yeah. Well, the next one, which I do know you've worked with, is traditional hop oils. What are these things and how are they used?
Yeah, so I'm not sure exactly how they're made. I know that originally they were made with a chemical extraction with like a solvent, and that's not done anymore. Now I believe all the hop oils are made with a CO2 extraction process similar to the hop extract. But basically, it's a small amount you need to add to your brew, and it enhances the hop character. It's a little bit different than using a whole hop. It's going to add a different kind of flavor. And the way most people use these products and the way I've used them in the past is simply to augment a dry hop flavor from a pellet, a standard pelletized dry hop process, and just adding a little bit. And a funny story, when I was first starting out in the brewing business, this was back in the late 1980s, and I went to a bar in Pleasanton, California, called Lions. It was like the first multi-tap craft bar that I was ever aware of. And I went in there, and they were the first place to ever serve the beer I was brewing at the time, San Andreas, first place to ever serve it besides serving it in our own pub. So it was a very special place for me, and the person that owned it, Judy Ashworth, is still a very good friend of mine. But anyway, I went in there one time, and she was pouring two of our beers, and Bert Grant happened to be there. And Bert Grant is a real pioneer in the brewing business. He worked in some Canadian breweries and worked in the Yakima hop business for a long time. And he ran a brewery in Yakima called Grant's. And it was one of the first brew pubs in the United States. And he was the first one to put out a bottled beer labeled as IPA in the craft era, you know, since Ballantine. And anyway, he was in the pub, and it was a real honor to meet him. And I bought him one of our beers, and he immediately pulled out a little vial and put some drops in it. Pulled some drops out of there and put it into his beer. And he said, "Ah, that's much better." And I was like, "Wow, should I be offended or what?" And Judy came to me and said, "You know, Bert carries around this eyedropper vial full of hop oil, and he adds hop oil to every single beer he drinks. So don't think he doesn't like your beer. He likes your beer. Otherwise, he would have sent it back." So it was a very interesting thing, but and he did do that. It was very very much a part of his character.
Nice. Well, one variation of this is steam distilled hop oils. What are those?
Yeah, those are a fairly new product that have come out, and I know Sierra Nevada uses a steam distilled process for the hop oil they use in Hop Hunter, which is an Imperial IPA. I have just started playing around with the material myself. There are people that say it's because it's a steam distillation, it's a hot distillation, that you get a different flavor than using a traditional hop oil. I haven't had the opportunity yet to do a side by side comparison, but I do like the distilled hop oil product a lot. I was doing the beer that we did that I mentioned earlier that we did with Kelsey McNair at North Park Brewing and Colby Chandler. We used a little of it in the back end. And I'm finding that's the best way to do it, similar to hop oil, is to dry hop maybe at a little bit reduced rate and then supplement the dry hop with the hops oil. And it intensifies the hop flavor, but doesn't change it to the point where you don't, you know, where you would notice that it's different, you know, if you use it as a blend and in a combination. And it's interesting because the recommended usage rate on the steam distilled hop oil is 3 to 5 milliliters per barrel. So it's a very small amount that you're adding. You typically add it to bright beer. If you add it to the fermenter, you can strip out some of the volatiles. So, you know, it's something that, you know, you don't want to add before you've clarified your beer. If you're filtering or settling or biofining or whatever, you want to add it after that. The challenge in using it is it tends to stratify in the beer. And so the recommended way to use this is to emulsify the oil in an alcohol mixture, like a grain alcohol, that you can then add to your beer. And it doesn't take a lot. It takes a very small volume, but it really works well. And one of the things that I'm really excited about.
You mentioned the commercial name there is Hops Oil, I think, is one of them, right?
Yeah, Hops Oil is the one that we've been using. And that's made from a company called Glacier Hops Ranch in Montana. And the guys, Tom Britz, who runs that company, has been a great guy to work with. He sent me a lot of samples, and we've been playing around with it a lot. I don't think it's available on the homebrew level yet. I did share some samples when I talked at the Brew Your Own Boot Camp a few weeks ago, and it was pretty entertaining to play around with, just adding basically dipping a toothpick into the oil and then swirling that toothpick around in a glass of beer, and it's amazing how intense the hop character was in that beer. So it's fun to use. One really neat thing that I've seen by using this in combination with pellets is the hop aromatics stick around a lot longer in the beer than they would if you just use pellets. And I think that's something that really intrigues me, because I get very concerned about hop flavor dropping off in a packaged beer very quickly. And I think that's the biggest issue with commercial IPAs right now, is if once they get past 60, 90 days, the hop character is just fallen off. And I found that by using the hops oil, and I want to study this a lot more because it's all it's all really just kind of seat of the pants stuff right now. But I found that by using the hops oil, you know, we did a triple IPA at Refuge Brewery out in California before I got this place started, and they were letting me brew on their systems. We did a triple IPA where we added 3 milliliters per barrel to the dry hop in the bright. In the bright tank after we had dry hopped the beer and processed it. And the beer had great hop character after 3-4 months. It was still really intensely hoppy and still tasting very fresh. And that's something that I really want to take another look at.
And of course, one problem with aromatics is they don't like to stay in the beer, right? Pretty much by definition.
They don't. And you know, one of the things that we were looking at is Stone, and I still want to look at, and I wish we could get some researchers to really study this, is why certain varieties fall off faster than others. And I'm sure it has to do with the specific oil contents and which hop oils are prominent. But I found that American hops tend to fall off a lot faster than New Zealand, Australian, English, or German hops. Mm-hmm. And there's something going on there. And I'd like to understand it, because, you know, Citra hops are probably the worst offender in my opinion, and which is a shame because it's one of my favorite hops. But, you know, if you're doing a beer that you want to have a 90-day shelf life, you know, if you use straight Citra in that beer, you know, you got to realize that the hops are going to fall off pretty quick.
And finally, I wanted to talk about aromatic hop oils. I understand you can now, in some cases, even get individual hop oils like myrcene and work directly with these, right?
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to try this yet. I'm curious about it. But, you know, the one thing I'll say is that, you know, there are a lot of studies going on at schools like Oregon State where they are identifying the compounds in hops that really provide the most bang for the buck as far as flavor. And they're finding that some of the oil compounds, and not necessarily the terpenes like myrcene, but some of the sulfur containing compounds are the ones that are there in much smaller concentrations, but providing the most flavor. And so it'd be very interesting to try something like myrcene or humulene or something like that in a beer and see how it really tastes. I just haven't had a chance to try this yet, but I think it's fascinating.
Yeah, it's pretty neat that you could potentially just isolate or even create your own flavor profiles doing that, huh?
The research is going on into hop chemistry right now with craft beer and trying to get a lot of really intense hop flavor in beer. I think it's amazing. And I just, it's something that just fascinates me all the time.
Well, we've seen an explosion of these new hop products. I wondered if you had any closing thoughts on where we're going next with all this stuff.
I think it's just going to keep continuing. I think people are going to refine how to use these products best. I think the one thing about brewers, commercial brewers, professional brewers, is they tend to be very traditional and very slow to change. And so I think it's really cool that a lot of these products are being made available to home brewers, because home brewers are the ones that tend to think out of the box a little bit more quickly than a professional brewer does. Professional brewers are rooted in tradition. They don't want to change the flavor of their beer if it's already successful. And sometimes they just don't have the wherewithal to do these trials without risking losing a lot of money. So, it's great to see that homebrewers have access to a lot of these products and can play around with them, because, to be honest, I continue to take inspiration from what homebrewers are doing, and I expect to see some great things with some of these products.
Well, Mitch, thank you once again for coming on the show. Really appreciate you being here.
You bet, Brad. It's always fun. Thanks.
And my guest today was my good friend Mitch Steele. He's brewmaster at New Realm Brewing, a new brewery in Atlanta, and author of the book IPAs. Mitch, thank you again for coming on the show. Thanks.
You bet.
Well, a big thank you to Mitch Steele for joining me this week. Thanks also to Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Their educational program lets you learn about every aspect of brewing in detail. Take advantage of their fantastic sale and get 20% off the magazine or any of their courses when you use the offer code BEERSMITH2018 at learn.beerandbrewing.com. And also Blickman Engineering, creators of the innovative new BrewVision wireless thermometer. Remotely monitor your brewing system from your iPhone or iPad, record data, set alerts, and grab recipes directly from the Beersmith Cloud. The BrewVision thermometer, another great innovation from BlickmanEngineering.com. And finally, Beersmith Mobile. The mobile version of Beersmith is a perfect complement to our desktop brewing software. Check out Beersmith Mobile at beersmith.com/mobile or on the Google Play, iTunes, or Amazon app stores. Thank you for listening. I hope you have a great brewing week.